deal a little bit more with Bhava, and then we'll hopefully start on Prema. So, this is from the Madhuri Kandambini, as described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, some of the different things about Bhava. So this Bhava is also called Rati, and the fragrance of the flower of Bhava Bhakti of a devotee forcibly attracts Sri Krishna like honey towards a bee. When the devotee reaches the state of Bhava, he anoints the Lord with the Bhava-scented oil of affection, squeezed out of the sesame of his spiritual consciousness. The Lord is also overwhelmed by enjoying the Bhava Bhakti of his devotee. And then it describes how the devotee is adorned even by the demigods. When the Bhava is awakened in the heart, he has tears of prema. This is the first budding of the first symptoms of the eight sattvika transformations adorn his body. Not always, but just sometimes. The example in the Nectar of Devotion that's used is Ambarish Maharaj, when he was attacked by Durvasa Muni, then he immediately concentrated his mind upon Krishna, and symptoms of prema or ecstasy came from his eyes. So this concentration of the mind upon Krishna producing the eight sattvika transformations, or some of them, is the first sign of bhava. That sometimes he feels at intervals he hears Krishna's flute. Sometimes he may hear Krishna's tinkling of his ankle bells, etc. Sometimes Krishna may touch him with his hands, his body. And then when he doesn't feel or sense Krishna, then he's thrown into pangs of separation from Krishna. And that even in all conditions, whether in wakefulness or sleeping or deep sleep, he resolves to fix his mind upon Krishna. And that his eternal body, or Swarup Siddhi, Siddha Deha, his chit body, is developed. He forgets the egoism, false egoism of I and mine in the material consciousness. Though such a devotee tries to hide his spiritual experiences from worldly-minded folks, they become manifest in the company of genuine, free, and enthusiastic devotees. So to the ordinary people, such expressions of super mundane consciousness appear to be craziness. Of course, Prabhupada, by his example and by his teachings, even when one goes to the highest stages, he always hides himself, at least especially publicly. One time a devotee asked Prabhupada, he said, sometimes during kirtan I cry, is that all right? And Prabhupada said, in the company of devotees that's all right, because they'll understand, but not publicly.
Yes. What are the eight, you mentioned eight sattvika transformations?
Beginning with crying. The same, the major ones, Lord Chaitanya says, are, how does that verse go? Nayanam Galarashu Darya Gadgararya Zira Lakarni Dutam Bhukada Tavanama Grahane Bhavishati. When will my eyes be decorated with tears of love flowing constantly while I chant your holy name? When will my hair stand on end? When will another devotee prays, Gauranga Balite Have, when by chanting and invoking the name of Lord Chaitanya, there'll be a shivering in the body. And by chanting Hare Krishna, tears will come to the eyes. So especially these symptoms are the major ones. Trembling, tears. But there are the other ones. Perspiration, becoming stunned, changing the color of the body, and the last one is devastation.
What did you say about these eight sattvic transformations?
That they had their beginning at the state of bhava. So, the Bhava, we were explaining also about Stayi Bhava. Stayi Bhava is like the ocean. And in this Stayi Bhava, there are different waves that appear, and they appear to increase the ocean, the waves. So similarly, Vyavichari Bhava is one of the different transformations which increase the Stayi Bhava, or the permanent ecstasy. So, just to bring out something from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says that Bhagavad Bhava, or Bhakti, or Bhava, that is Rati, appears in two different ways. First, by intense attention to one's spiritual practices, that is, by nishta, or firmness in the striving for the unfolding of bhakti, after cessation of all obstacles and defects that cloud bhakti, anartha nivritti. So when one comes to the state of anartha nivritti, those impediments that stop one from fully engaging in Krishna's service without any hesitation, they're removed. That hesitation, should I serve Krishna, should I do this or not, they're removed. And therefore, from that, the intense eagerness to engage in Krishna consciousness develops through the combination of ruchi, or taste, for such service and attachment to the service, then eventually manifests itself in bhava, or transcendental ecstasy. And secondly, by the grace of Krishna and his devotees. So there is Kripa Siddha, Sadhana Siddha, and Nitya Siddha. So Kripa Siddha is very rare. It is not that we strive to become Kripa Siddha. Prabhupada gives the example of just like if generally to get a PhD degree, you have to go to college and study. It's not that you simply wait at the college entrance and hoping that they'll bestow upon you the entrance to the university at the doorstep, hoping that they'll bestow upon you by some mercy the degree. So similarly, one has to try ardently to come to the higher platforms of devotional service, but always expecting simultaneously that Krishna will bestow his mercy upon one. Of these two ways, the appearance of rati in the heart, the first is common, while the second cause is exceptional and rarely obtained. So generally, a devotee reaches perfection through intense practice of sadhana. At the end of one tape, just bringing out that in 1968, Prabhupada was giving a talk which is entitled, I forget what the title is now. But in any case, Prabhupada said at the end of the lecture, he was quoting different, the sequence of it, he starts out with explaining how everyone's looking for freedom from misery. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nishoshati Nakankshati Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhakti Mlabhate Param. In Spanish it was Escapando las Limites de Existencia. Escaping the limits of existence. So that everyone is trying to become joyful, free from misery. So in order to do that, one has to become free from both lamentation and hankering. Then one can actually become established on the Brahma-Buddha platform, for which he sees everyone on the same spiritual level. That everyone, he said, that even the Buddhists, every philosopher is trying to get rid of the miseries of material existence, but because they're captivated by some limited conception, which ultimately winds up in sense gratification, therefore they can't get out of their problems. Because they don't really know that the real goal in life is to obtain Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada was emphasizing that. And then at the end of the lecture he said, so try to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. He said, that will do good for you and it will do good for others. He said, that is your sadhana, that is your practice of penance and austerities, that's trying to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. So our sadhana because it's to hear about Krishna in the morning program. But then our realization of it also comes through trying to actively fulfill the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by distributing this Krishna consciousness to others. That not that our son, in other words, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Prabhupada has given us a certain sadhana of preaching, which I don't think was very prominent before, except before Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, or say Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This idea of becoming Krishna conscious by actively preaching it to others. Because we can see that. I mean, how many groups are actually so actively engaged in preaching as this particular line coming from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So this Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, he requested, I believe, his disciples to chant at least 64 rounds. But he also expected them to preach. And Prabhupada put the rounds down to 16. So, and he also, practically speaking, he tried to push his disciples to preach even more vigorously. That he wanted hundreds of millions of books distributed. And by such endeavor, and by, probably mentioned a lot of things, distributing books, he'd say that by the sincere endeavor, you boys and girls are guaranteed to go back to the spiritual world. And also, Prabhupada pointed out, for instance, to build the city of Mayapur. He said, if you can build a city in Mayapur, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur will come personally and bring you back to Godhead. Excuse me? So Prabhupada gave us a very practical sadhana. Not only the sadhana of hearing and chanting about Krishna, but also the sadhana of very actively engaging in Krishna service on the basis of that philosophy and utilizing everything that exists to ultimately bring people to the platform of understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is, engaging art, music, culture in general, all these different things. It's all based upon Prabhupada's books, so that people become convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this work of spreading Krishna consciousness in that way, those who are musicians or artists or actors or book distributors or cooks, the active engagement to convince people that Krishna is God by utilizing these energies, that's also part of our sadhana. And out of the two, Prabhupada emphasized that more than the first. Of course, you can't without the first, there is no second. They said between Pancharajika Vidhi and Bhagavat Marga, this preaching work is the more important. So if we neglect the preaching work, then eventually our taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna will diminish, and then there won't be any more Hare Krishna movement. Or at least we won't be in the Hare Krishna movement. On the other hand, if we simply preach, so-called preach, and we forget about who we're preaching for, then even our preaching becomes more and more, or Prabhupada said, if you stop chanting your rounds, then eventually everything becomes material, at least to yourself. One's activities become fruit rather than spiritual. Any questions about this? Yes? About Team Tracy?
Sometimes I've seen temples, in certain temples, there'll be more devotees than devotees, and devotees who are actually living in temples are maintaining the deities, but virtually no preaching is going on. And so I always wondered in my mind, because we hear how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati emphasizes preaching and book publication and book distribution over other types of devotional service. And Prabhupada had the same thing. So I always wonder in situations like that, if, but then we also know that it's offensive to lower the deity. Once you set the standard of deity worship, it's offensive to lower it. Or, to relocate sometimes. So I always wonder, like, in situations like that, you have this deity worship going on, and that's it. So if Srila Prabhupada
Those are usually those. Everything in our movement is part of our preaching movement. Prabhupada's establishing the temples, having places the devotees who live in the temples, and show the example of how to be a Krishna conscious devotee. The whole idea was preaching that people can come and see the standard of deity worship there. They can take prasadam and hear from, see, observe the devotees and hear from them. Have classes regularly, etc. So there's nothing in our movement outside of that preaching work. So how to balance, you know, the book distribution with the deity worship, that's really up to different circumstances. It's up to the managers to figure that out. You know, what's necessary. But there's no conflict. It's all part of the same preaching. The deities are not there to impede our preaching. They're part of the preaching. They're a pretty big part of the preaching, too. Because they're what we're preaching about. So that always has to be considered. On the other hand, they want us to preach. They want us to go out so people can come to the temple and see them, learn about them, and actively serve them, and learn how to establish them in their own homes. So those adjustments have to, that's the management's form, to figure those things out. Yes?
Stai-bhav are the permanent ecstasies, and Devitari-bhav,
Nagar-bhav,
the sort of transitory
that
enhance
the Stai-bhav. Right.
Can you give an example of
Stai-bhav? Stai-bhav is in the five rasas, neutral. Yeah, if you look in the Nectar of Devotion, you'll see that they seem to be repeated twice, the five relationships with Krishna. So there's the beginning of the Stai-bhava, when the permanent ecstasy, and then when it becomes combined with all these different sthayi bhava, combines with vibhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, and sanchari bhava, which is also known as vyabhichari bhava, they combine together, and then they produce rasa, and they're a common as they combine. Then it's known as the five primary rasas. So the five these are the five Sanchari Bhavas. Five types of Sanchari Bhava. Permanent ecstasy. And when they combine with these other bhavas, then they're called rasa. They produce the five types of rasas. Stai bhava is the permanent ecstasy. If you look at in the Nectar of Devotion, you'll find a spontaneous devotion further described in chapter 16. And then it has conjugal love, parented, or etc. And then the next chapter is ecstatic love, which describes bhava. So these are different sthayi bhavas, the five, which later on becomes the five rasas, when they combine with the different types of bhavas, such as vibhavas, sattvika bhava, anubhava, and sanchari bhava. Then they call rasa.
And when one develops bhava, what follows are these, there's nine main anubhava emotions, right? Those are permanent, the person must develop bhava.
What's permanent is the sthayi bhava, one's patila mood in serving Krishna. Just like I may be, for instance, be attracted to hear about Krishna as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. So I have a certain attraction for that mood. That's my sthayi bhava. And while hearing about that relationship, then I may roll on the ground in ecstasy. That's called anubhava. So I have that particular mood I like to hear about Krishna, the ashraya. It's called alamban. Krishna is the vishaya, having relationships with the Ashraya devotees in that particular mood. It's called Vibhava. And then I may see, you know, the different paraphernalia of Krishna, the way he dresses, his beauty, that's called Udipan. So that's Vibhava. And while remembering and experiencing those things, I roll on the ground, that's called Anubhava. And when, after what that intensified, from my body comes different, from the internal emotions come different sattvika bhavas. My body becomes stunned, tears flow from my eyes due to the ecstasy. That's called sattvika bhava.
And the nine that you were saying yesterday, like detachment, eagerness, hope, those are nine what?
Those are the symptoms by which one can understand that someone's on the bhava platform. Those are symptoms that develop.
And they're not called anubhava.
No, those are not
anubhava.
Yeah, those are nine qualities that of one who has ecstatic love for Krishna. Yeah.
Just two things, Maharaj. You mentioned that Bhava comes from intense performance of sadhana bhakti and secondly by the grace of devotees, etc. And you mentioned that in relationship to Vishnu and Chakrabati Tathagata, he states that. Where does this go?
Bhakti Rasamrita
Singh. And also, yesterday you said that Bhava only comes free from the four defects.
Well, that's just a logical.
Oh, okay.
In other words, the four different defects, beginning with spontaneous. When one's senses are purified, according to Bhagavad Gita, then when one comes to the stage of purified senses, then one is on the perfect platform. So if one is an Uttama Adhikari, then it's understood that he's free from the four different types of defects.
Why couldn't it be a Saktis?
Excuse me?
Why could it not be a Saktis?
A Sakti.
Yeah, a Sakti.
Well, these are different degrees of the same thing. One's devotion doesn't become perfect until one actually reaches a stage of prema or bhava. So a Sakti, there's some defect there. In other words, one is practically, depending on what point of a sakti one is on, but one is practically perfect. But he's still following some sadhana to come to the platform of spontaneous, you know, love for Krishna, awakening his rati or bhava. So Narada Muni, this is a quote from Srimad Bhagavatam. O Vyasadeva, in that association, and by the mercy of those great Vedantas, I could hear them describe the attractive activities of Lord Krishna, and thus listening attentively, my taste for hearing of the personality of Godhead increased at every step. So in the commentary by Jiva Goswami, he says that by their mercy should be understood to mean their order. In other words, here it's saying, in that association, by the mercy of those great Vedantas, I could hear them describe the attractive activities of Lord Krishna. So by their mercy doesn't mean kripa siddha. Narada Muni did not become perfect by kripa, hearing from them, but by practicing what they had to say. So similarly, sometimes when devotees would ask for Prabhupada's mercy, Prabhupada would say, my instructions, that's my mercy. That to follow the instructions of the spiritual master, that's his giving instructions, that's his mercy. Just like sometimes the spiritual master will write, please accept my blessings. But what does that mean? We should simply sit there and, you know, accept his blessings and then say, well, everything's done. No, his blessings follow gives his instructions. Please accept my blessings, because sometimes we may not be so receptive to follow his instructions, which are his blessings. So listening attentively, well, this is Mukunda Das Goswami, who's another commentator on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says listening attentively means indicates one's profound earnestness in spiritual practices. So how do we show that we're sincere, according to this? Is that we listen attentively. Just like if I'm, sometimes I remember the spiritual masters in our movement, we sometimes come to a temple and everyone throw flowers. But when it came to the Bhagavatam class, everyone would fall asleep. Even with Prabhupada was there, I remember some of the most difficult times I've ever had in my life trying to stay awake is when Prabhupada gave lectures. It was like Maya would immediately attack me, my heart. It was like I felt like I got hit by an arrow. Sometimes when I was with Prabhupada, I remember one time I was walking on Venice Beach with Prabhupada, and I was always very reluctant to say anything. But Prabhupada was talking, and I was just trying to listen. Somehow or another, I just felt I was getting some mercy coming from Krishna. And he just allowed me to listen with attention to Prabhupada. I remember Prabhupada looking at me. He was like shocked. He was like amazed that I was actually listening attentively. And I could see how satisfied he was, just that somehow or another Krishna just put me in a position. He was able to listen a little attentively. But usually when a lot of times in Prabhupada gave class, I remember one time Prabhupada gave a series of lectures in New Vrindavan. It was at night. And I was like one of the cooks for the feast. So I'd cook and I was organizing the boga for this huge feast that they had every day in New Vrindavan in 1974, I think, or something, or 70, I can't remember what year it was. What they call it. They put out a book about it. It's a series of talks by Prabhupada in New Vrindavan. And every time Prabhupada would give a lecture at night, immediately the first thing I'd do is start to fall asleep. It was like, but that's one of the ways we can show our earnestness and our seriousness is by trying to pay attention the best we can. Śrīla Viśvanātha Cakravarti Thakura makes this following special comment that although the different stages of rati, starting from shraddha to the appearance of rati, that is bhava bhakti, should be said to be the cause of rati, yet truly speaking it is only after the cessation of all obstacles and defects that cloud bhakti and ardha nivritti, and soon after this nishta, firmness in the striving for the unfolding of bhakti, this intensity of desire for spiritual practices is actually said to be the cause of the appearance of bhava bhakti, that is, rati in the heart and consciousness of the devotee. So sometimes we may say that shraddha and all the way up to rati or asakti is the cause of the appearance of bhava, but actually it's after one gets through all the reluctancies, as we went over. Śrīla Prabhupāda writes, fear of a personal spiritual identity, the negligence of spiritual life, and the frustration of which arises from the void conception of life. When these anarthas are taken away, then one actually becomes very enthusiastic to serve Krishna. And by that enthusiasm and by the earnest practice of his spiritual sadhana, then generally he rises up to the stage of bhava. Before that, one is just trying to go, you know, develop the enthusiasm, but at the same time, free himself from these impurities that dampen the enthusiasm. It's like if you try and light a fire and then you pour water on it, and the water puts the fire out. So trying to start up devotional service and at the same time have anarthas is that you do a little practice of devotional service and then the anarthas come and they just take the enthusiasm away.
Yeah. So you said that
that's not what it says. What it says is that after the stage of nishta, then the devotee becomes spontaneously or more the ardent desire to become Krishna conscious manifests itself fully without impediment. And that is said, that earnest desire to serve Krishna in that mood without impediments is really the cause of bhava bhakti eventually manifesting itself. Of course, we can't say that Shraddha until the appearance of Rati. Here's saying, truly speaking, it's only after the cessation of all obstacles and defects that cloud bhakti and arta nivritti, and soon after the jnishta, that is firmness in the striving for the unfolding of bhakti. This adora for spiritual practices has been said to be the immediate cause of the appearance of bhava bhakti or rati in the heart and consciousness of the devotee. The immediate cause. Of course, even it says a neophyte, by performing those five different types of practices, even he can experience ecstasy by practicing them. But the awakening of bhava bhakti, the actual spontaneous desire to serve Krishna in some particular relationship, because of that really comes after nishta, the eagerness to serve Krishna without any impediments, that produces that the bhava bhakti. Until that, then half we're striving to make some advancement, half we're just trying to get rid of our impediments, of dampening our spirit of bhakti. So, just to briefly mention about shadow and para attachment. So, sometimes it appears that persons who are mental speculators, fruitive workers, mystic yogis, sometimes it appears that they have some attachment for Krishna. I haven't read that book, but there was one book called Paramahamsa Yogananda, Autobiography of a Yogi. Then I heard at least that in the book that sometimes Krishna would appear before him. Have you read that book?
Yeah, about 25 years ago.
Is that true, Krishna would appear before him? Has anyone read that book?
Yeah, that's what it says in there.
So there's one devotee in our movement. What's his name again? From California, from Gopa Vrindapal. I couldn't get the story exactly because I didn't the time sequence. But either it was his parents who lived next to him, or whatever. But he said that somehow or another he was living near Paramananda. Paramahamsa Yogananda. I don't know if the sequence is possible. Do you know when he left his body? What year was that?
It was around 1920s.
Somehow or another he had information that he used to eat chicken. He wasn't exactly strict vegetarian in terms of what our understanding is. But somehow or another in this book he's meeting Krishna and Krishna's coming for him dancing. So what do we call that? Bogus. So this is what it's talking about. So if a pretender Mayavadi, for instance, is sometimes seen possessing imitative attachment to Krishna, that will not be accepted as real attachment. But such attachment gives the pretender hope that he may eventually rise into the actual platform of pure devotional service. So this is a little bit like this. There's many different types of sahajiyas. And some of the practically all of them are tinged with Mayavadi philosophy. So, imitative attachment can be divided into two headings, shadow and para. So shadow is that someone, without even undergoing the regular principles, that suddenly, or without being guided by a bona fide spiritual master, shows some attachment. Such as Krishna is coming and he's talking to me, etc. So, such a person attaching material enjoyment to salvation associates. Here is the. It's explained that sometimes by association of the devotees, there's some experience like that. But such attachment is very flickering, not very steady. But if one experiences shadow attachment, feels the disappearance of all material pangs, then it's called para attachment. So if one gets associates with the devotees, even without following the regular principles or following the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master, feels some ecstasy, that's called shadow attachment. And if by such shadow attachment, all the material pangs are disappeared, that's called para attachment. So the conclusion is that transcendental attachment is so powerful that even a common person who hasn't undergone regular principles, even he can actually experience it, and bring that par attachment will eventually bring one to the professional stage. But then there's a discussion how such attachments can be extinguished by offenses at the lotus feet of a pure devotee. But the ultimate conclusion is that steady progress in devotional service can be obtained only in the association of pure devotees. So that's the ultimate conclusion, is that if we really want to develop our attachment for Krishna and eventually come to the platform of ecstasy, it has to be done in the association of pure devotees. That even the imitative attachment, you know, depends upon that. But to speak of steady progress in devotional service. So although Bhava and we'll be discussing prema are very high stages of realizations, but they're obtained by slow degrees by the process of devotional service, generally under regular principles. And what does that mean? By whether we want to or not, getting up early in the morning, going to Mangala Arati, hearing the Bhagavatam class, worshipping the spiritual master, chanting our rounds, etc. All these, and then working for Krishna. Sadhana is supposed to be performed how many hours a day if one wants to become perfect? 24 hours a day. So it's not like there's one thing called sadhana, where we're in one sense, that we're chanting in the morning, and then we have in the day we have free to do whatever, you know, something else, and then at night we come back for sadhana. It's all supposed to be sadhana. So the person who's working in the factory, but he's giving the results to Krishna, that's also part of his sadhana in one sense. Yeah.
In Nectar and Version, Prabhupada translates the word sadhana as practice. One is practicing sadhana bhakti, devotional service in practice, like a training process. Not just the spirit, early morning spiritual practice.
So Rupa Goswami says 24 hours a day hearing and chanting about Krishna. So it's all sadhana, and by doing that, that is, if it's done under the directions of a bona fide spiritual master, then gradually one comes to the transcendental platform by becoming free from his reluctancy, his misgivings to serve Krishna, and then gradually rising up to the point of nishtha bhakti, where one is steadily all day long engaged in Krishna's service, and that eagerness develops into taste and eventually attachment, which manifests the natural bhava of the soul within the heart. Krishna Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sada Kavinoy Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Karyaya Udoy. That by this process of sadhana bhakti, eventually bhava bhakti manifests itself from there. Oh, why don't we read a little bit about some of the experiences of bhava bhakti? Let's go into prema bhakti actually. So when all these bhavas, as we said, sanchari bhava, when stayi bhava combines with these four other different types of bhavas, and they combine together, then from that type of machine, you can compare it to rati is like, stayi bhava is like the axle. And these other bhavas, when they combine together in the machine, then it produces rasa. And that from that rasa prema, that's prema.
All right. Yeah. On chapter 7, second to last paragraph, it has the dominating ruler or king generated from these elements called Stai Bhava, which by mixing with the elements produces shanti, glasses, shanti, etc. So, okay, you can understand the... I understand what Sai Baba is, but it says by mixing with the elements produces shanti, glasses. What does that mean? Not quite.
It means that when Sai Baba mixes with the other bhavas, Sanchari bhava, then rasa is produced in the five rasas. But this is saying the same thing. There are five types of devotees. The other point that's mentioned here also is that there are two different types of bhavas, one arising from Raganuga, Sadhana Bhakti, and the other one arising from Vaidhi Bhakti. So there are two different paths or methods of coming to the platform of bhava, and they're called Raganuga and Vaidhi. Generally one follows Vaidhi Bhakti and then his service becomes more voluntarily with some taste. Prabhupada writes that in Nectar Devotion that in the beginning he gives an example that he's one is serving the deities and then he's under the orders of the spiritual master. That's called Vaidhi. But when he voluntarily gets up and decorates the deity and tries to improve his devotional service, probably calls that Raganuga. So generally Vaidhi is the beginning under rules and regulations when there's no taste or liking, and then it becomes more spontaneous. When it becomes more voluntarily and spontaneous, then it's called Raganuga. So generally Vaidhi comes to the platform, if one comes to the platform of Raganuga, it's generally through the process of Vaidhi Bhakti, is Vaikuntha. But if you develop spontaneous love for Krishna after following all the rules and regulations perfectly, then your destination is somewhere like Goloka Vrindavan. So here, any other questions about this? So the creeper of bhakti, which first sprouted two leaves during Sadhana Bhakti, now suddenly appears with many smooth petals in the form of Anubhavas. So these are really when the full Anubhava, when all these bhavas manifest themselves fully. They just made their appearance a little bit in bhava, what's called bhava, but now they really manifest themselves to their full extent in prema, attached to the flower of bhava. Someone like to read? Can you read? Yeah, in a loud voice.
Please, you want to start from the beginning?
Yeah.
From the creeper of bhakti, which first sprouted two leaves during Sadhana Bhakti, now suddenly appear many smooth petals in the form of anubhavas, the symptoms of ecstasy, attached to the flower of bhava. These anubhavas are filled with the devotional processes such as hearing and chanting and shine brilliantly at every moment, first forming the flower called bhava. Finally, they bring forth the fruit called prema. But what is most astonishing about the creeper of bhakti is that though its leaves, bud, flower, and fruit mature in the succeeding form, they do not give up their original forms. Together, they shine in newer and newer ways. The devotee's innumerable emotions were previously bound tightly by the ropes of possessiveness, family, relatives, house, and properties. However, when prema appears, it easily frees the emotions of the mind from all those attachments. By its inherent power, prema transforms those material emotions into personal, spiritual, and physical elements, and makes all ones the crude types of possessiveness of the same spiritual nature. Then, by those ropes of spiritual possessiveness, prema binds the spiritualized emotions to the sweetness of the Lord's name, form, and qualities. The splendorous sun of the prema in this way, the splendorous sun of prema in this way manifests its brilliance and immediately puts all material ideals, purusharta, to shame by constellations in the sky. The juice which comes from the fruit of prema, and is stated, has the essential quality of concentrated bliss, and its outstanding nourishing property is its power to attract Krishna. Needless to say, when the devotee begins to taste that juice, he does not take heed of any obstacles. Like a miser feverish form, Destiny. Like a miser feverish for treasure, like a thief who has lost all sense of discretion out of absorption in his job, the devotee loses all sense of self-consciousness. Sometimes there is an impatience for obtaining the Lord, like a hunger which cannot be satisfied even by eating the most tasty foods day and night. Burning like the sun by that society, he is soothed by the coolness of a thousand moons only on tasting the form, qualities, and sweetness of the Lord, which make a momentary appearance at that time. Simultaneously, his prema, arising from its own reservoir, increases slightly, and the devotee longs for direct contact with the Lord at every moment. By the intensity of his longing for the Lord, which burns under conflagration and tears his body like a sharp arrow, he remains unsatisfied with the momentary vision of the Lord's form, qualities, and sweetness. He considers friends as useless as a dry, overgrown well. His household becomes like a thorn-filled forest. Food becomes totally distasteful. Praise from other devotees is like biting a snake. Daily duties become unperformable. All the necessary rituals become an unmanageable burden. The consolation of his comrades is like poison. Though he remains constantly awake, wakefulness is an ocean of repentance, and his sleep seems to be simply fleeing from life. His body seems a target of chastisement for the Lord. His life years become as lifeless as roasted grains. What he previously took as his life's goal is abandoned as a great calamity. Even thinking of the Lord tears his body asunder.
One thing we have to be, at least as far as my understanding is, that we have to be a little cautious about. It's not that for ourselves, then it's not like being pregnant, you know, what if such and such devotee, he's not going on Sankirtan anymore because he's in prema. He's about to give birth to pure love of God. So everything has become terrible, distasteful, so now he's not doing any preaching. But we can just understand that this is a mood of intense feelings of separation from Krishna, which is being described here, by which we, for ourselves, that we may experience that, but that doesn't mean that we stop our duties in Krishna consciousness. But it, instead, Prabhupada gave the example of the lady who had a paramour, that she would execute her duties even better, and at the same time would always think of her paramour, so that her husband wouldn't detect. So that was an example that Prabhupada was giving to show that a devotee in advanced spiritual consciousness, it's not that he neglects his normal duties, but he performs even better, but at the same time intensely thinks of the object of his duties, namely Krishna. So when we read this, we have to take that into account. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is writing for a different audience in one sense. You know, someone's describing that his household duties became a thorn-filled forest, etc. Food becomes totally distasteful. I mean, in one sense, when we do reach that platform, emotionally it'll be like that, but it's not that we'll stop eating or we'll give up our family life or whatever.
Then prema, assuming the form of a tender kiss, attracts Black Krishna and makes him appear to the devotee for a moment. At that time, all the senses of the devotee, eyes, nose, ears, tongue, sense of touch, become the receptacles of all the auspicious qualities of Krishna. His supreme beauty, fragrance, melody, youthfulness, tastiness, audarya, and karunya. From tasting the extreme sweetness and ever-freshness of these qualities of the Lord, a greater longing which at every moment increases is born in the devotee. Poetic words are not adequate to describe the ocean of bliss which appears at this time. Like a traveler on a desert path, burned by the sun's rays during the hot season, who takes shelter in a cool place supplied with a hundred vessels filled with icy water from a fine pool, under the shade of a vast banyan tree densely tangled with branches, or like an elephant caught in a forest fire who is finally bathed by unlimited water from a bank of rain clouds. The devotee, afflicted by mortal disease and craving satisfaction, drinks the nectar, tastes his exquisite sweetness, and experiences unbounded bliss.
So tomorrow we'll read a little bit about Narada Muni and his experience We can compare that to the experience that Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura will give us here. And also we can see the same experience as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was manifesting increasingly, the feelings of separation from Krishna, and then eventually joining with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, the feelings of separation. So we can go over that tomorrow. Thank you very much.